It's Thursday, the 9th of June, 2016. Happy birthday to Udonis Haslam. Gebhardt 00. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like T Gebhardt 00 and sponsor the podcast, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become a sponsor of the show. Thank you, T Gebhardt. Thank you to everyone who has done that. And of course, thank you to Fantrax for sponsoring the podcast. All right. We are going to be talking in today's show about the Atlanta Hawks. It's the Atlanta Hawks season in review show. So
let's get to it.
I will. Again, a quick thing, if you didn't hear it on the Indiana Pacers podcast yesterday, talking about the Red Rock 30-team Dynasty League, I have opened up a second 30-team Dynasty League. I said I've got, I think, 15 spots in that field already. I've got about another 30 applications, maybe 50. There's a stack to get through. But if you want to throw your hat in the ring and you want to get into this 30-team Dynasty League, send me an email. I'm going to cut it off on Sunday, and then I'm going to make the decisions for the final 15 spots in the league. So if you are interested in getting into that league, send me an email, redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. The Atlanta Hawks, a huge season last season, definitely massive. Number one seed in the Eastern Conference, got torn apart by the Cavs in the conference finals. And we all thought a regression was on the cards. And they regressed. They dropped down to a 48-win team. They went 48-34. So a 12-game drop-off is pretty significant. But were they really that much different? Was that, yes, the team got worse in certain areas. The loss of Damari Carroll didn't help. The regression from Kyle Korver didn't help. But that was still a solid team, but again, pummeled by the Cleveland Cavaliers in the playoffs, and leaves you sort of thinking as a Hawks fan, where does this lead us? Do we ever have a title chance coming up? Probably not, but as I've said plenty of times, it's never just ring or bust, and it shouldn't be, because the last couple of seasons the Hawks have had have been successful. Yes, they haven't gotten over that hurdle of LeBron James and the Cavs, but to have a 60-win season, the amount of joy that would have brought the fans all through the season, yes, everyone wants a championship, but that's a good season. This season, 48-win, another pretty good season. Finished with the third best record in the Eastern Conference. It won that first round series against the Celtics. A pretty good year, but it feels like it's going to be hard for them to get over the hump and get themselves into NBA final caliber team, especially with their key players all aging at the moment and with some off-season issues coming up in terms of contracts. They've got pick 21 in this upcoming draft. They've also got two second rounders, so pick 44 and pick 54. They are probably going to need to get some wing depth and some big man depth as well. Now, whether that's going to be anything useful at those sort of picks remains to be seen. Obviously, free agency is still to occur. Also, let's talk about their free agency situation now. And we'll look at the big one, who is an unrestricted free agent, obviously, is Al Horford, who at 30 years of age, coming off another huge season. They've got Kirk Heinrich, who's an unrestricted free agent. Big deal. He's 35 years old. He probably won't be in the NBA next season. Kent Bazemore, another guy who was a key contributor, taking Damari Carroll's role on the wing. He is also an unrestricted free agent. And Chris Humphries, who they brought in after he was bought out at the end of the season. He played the last month and the playoffs for the team. He's an unrestricted free agent. They've got a team option on Mike Muscala, which I would imagine they would execute. They've got non-guaranteed deals for Mike Scott and for Lamar Patterson, and I guess both of those will be guaranteed depending on what happens in free agency. Now, the Hawks have been relatively ballsy in terms of approaching free agents. They make no bones about the fact they want to get a superstar and they want to get Kevin Durant. Now, whether they will or not remains to be seen, and you would have to think that the chances are probably less than 1% that Durant joins the Atlanta Hawks, but it would be pretty interesting if he did. And those sort of, if players want to join this team, then those non-guaranteed deals of a Mike Scott and Lamar Patterson, they may have to be renounced so that we can get the cap room for KD to come in. The team is interesting. Now, Al Horford is going to command a pretty big deal, probably a max contract, and you can get a five-year one from Atlanta. But when you're paying him $25 million plus at age 35, how good is that contract going to look? I would venture to guess that it looked pretty terrible. Kent Bazemore played for $2 million this year. He's going to get a lot more than $2 million. He is going to get 12. He is going to push 13, 14 million. He'll get a 3 to 4 year deal that, you know, 4 years, $50 million. I don't think that's... It sounds absolutely batshit insane, but it's not totally crazy. And that's what he's going to get. Now, whether they make that the move or not, obviously that would be after Durant said thanks, but no thanks. Do they bring Bazemore back or do they get someone else? You know, Heinrich and Humphries, whatever. They're bit part players on a team who is solid. But there is some interesting... One of the more interesting free agency teams coming up into the offseason, I think, the Atlanta Hawks, with just so many things to happen, especially when you've got a big-name player like Al Horford who is on the market. Before we get into talking about the rest of this team and the rest of the goings-on with this team, I want to take a quick minute to speak to you about Fantrax. You know Fantrax is the sponsor of this podcast. Fantrax.com is the website. And if you don't know what Fantrax is, this is the first podcast you're listening to in about a week's time, Fantrax is the best place to host your fantasy league, whether it's basketball or not, which I imagine it is basketball, but if you're setting up your football leagues, your college football leagues, your college basketball leagues, you want to transition your baseball over, any major sport, there's 9 sports in total that they cater for, Fantrax is the place to go. They've got the best, most customizable free league setup that you can find, any sort of options, any sort of categories, custom schedules, custom opponents. You can play 2-3 opponents per week if you want to. You can have salaries and contracts and dynasties and keepers, and set your own draft order. And Fantrax is open all the time, unlike ESPN, unlike Yahoo. Fantrax is always open. Plus, they have a premium model which enables you to add in so many different options, minor league squads, European stash players, college players into an NBA fantasy league. The options are almost limitless over at Fantrax. So make sure you are checking out Fantrax.com. That's where the Red Rock Listener Leagues will be hosted this season. We already hosted the Red Rock Dynasty League there last year. The Red Rock 30 will be there this year. The 30 Part 2 will be there. The Real Salary Cap, the Red Rock Roto Series, the Red Rock Listener Series. There'll be heaps of leagues over on Fantrax. And you know, the site's had a complete makeover. So if you've been to Fantrax before, in the past 3 years ago, yeah, I didn't like the UI, I didn't like the way it looked, forget about it. It's all changed. It's all new. It is all smooth and sleek. So check out Fantrax. It is the best place to host your league. Any of those issues you had running through ESPN and Yahoo, players not there, leagues not open, forget about it. Fantrax covers that all for you. So check out Fantrax.com. I do recommend it. The Atlanta Hawks, Paul Millsap. What an underrated star Paul Millsap is. He, and this is fantasy only that I'm talking about, because I think he's still underrated in the NBA. He's one of the best defensive players in the league. He's one of the best offensive players in the league. He does it all. But I think you'd be surprised to know that he's actually older than Al Horford. He's 31 years of age. He is signed on for next year at $20 million. He's got a player option for $21 million for the next season. But what Millsap was able to do this season, I don't think many people in their 9-cat leagues would have pegged Paul Millsap to be the 10th ranked player at the start of the season. He finished 14th in 8-cat leagues, and it's a jump from last season where he was 15th in 9-cat and 16th in 8-cat leagues. But he is a guy that is just a full contributor across the board. And you can see that if we go and take his worst two categories out, his ranking drops. And that's not because he's necessarily bad, it's because other players get better. So he is definitely a first round roto pick to me. If you're playing in a 9-cat roto league, he's one of the best options there. In an 8-cat, he's an early second. In a head-to-head, I probably favor him more towards the end of the second round, and that's why rankings aren't the be-all and end-all to me. Yes, he's 14th in 8-cat rankings, but to me, in a head-to-head league, I would go with him at pick 18, pick 20, that sort of range. And again, and I'll give you plenty of rants on the pitfalls of rankings throughout the off-season, but that's where you can't judge everything exactly by boil down to one single number that sits next to a player's name. This is taking nothing away from Paul Millsap, though, because he was great this year. He played 33 minutes a night and averaged 17.1 points. He hit 0.93, so he just missed the triple one, which he'd gotten the last two seasons. He grabbed 9 rebounds a game, had 3.2 assists, 1.8 steals, 1.8 blocks, 47 and 76, and hit 31% of his threes. Now, the 31% of his threes is a drop. He was at 36 for the previous two seasons, and that's a little bit of a concern if he sticks at that. But 17, 9, and 3 with almost 2 steals, almost 2 blocks, almost a 3 on 47 and 76. Like, what doesn't the guy do? What doesn't he do well? He does everything well. He was a positive in almost every single category, just a minor negative in threes, a minor negative in free throws, and we're talking tiny, tiny numbers here. Just a crazy season for Millsap, but he's 31. So will he ever get better than this? You would have to say no. He will never have a better season than this. He might have one equal to it or similar to it, but the decline is going to have to start in the next 2 seasons, you would imagine. So if you own him in a dynasty league, and anyone who's in the 30-team dynasty league that I'm currently in, and I own Paul Millsap, I hope you're not listening to this podcast, because I do own Paul Millsap and I might be looking to trade him, and don't take my thoughts on where he goes for granted, because I want to trade him away and I want to get value for him. Now, whether I can or not remains to be seen, because I'm a team that's been sitting in that first round exit in the playoffs in that league for the last 2 seasons. I've got Millsap. The rest of my team is getting older. I've got guys like Wes Johnson and David West, and I want to clear them out and get some younger talent in. Millsap, I think, is going to start to decline, and I don't think that's a crazy statement to say. He did lead this team in win shares comfortably at over 10, which is a huge number. Win shares per 48, he led the team in as well. Box score plus minus, he led the team in. He had a whopping 4.2 defensive box score plus minus, and that is the part of his game that is completely underrated, how good his defense is. He is one of the best defensive players in the game. His ability to get steals and play the passing lanes, his ability to block shots is something that I don't think many people really don't really appreciate it. But he is one of the best players in the NBA, and I think that many people will be surprised to find him sitting inside the top 15 of fantasy rankings. But Paul Millsap, an absolutely fantastic season, and yeah, I think we see another season where he's a top 20 guy next year, and then we might see him as a top 30 guy, and then I think the decline does start to come, yeah, maybe relatively strongly after that. I don't think he's going to be a player like Dirk who keeps himself in the top 40 until he's 37. I think that once he hits 33, 34, the numbers will drop down to 80s, 90s, that sort of range. That's just my guess at this early point, and that's based on gut feel and looking at what sort of player he is. Al Horford. We don't know where Al Horford will remain. He, from all reports, wants to remain in Atlanta. The extra year is important. If he's getting maxed out and getting 5 years, it's a no-brainer for me for him to stay in Atlanta and get that extra year, because it's going to be a terrible contract when he's 35 years old, getting paid $27, $28 million in that fifth year at age 35. It's going to be horrible. It's going to look like a Joe Johnson type of deal. And not to say that Horford won't age well, but at 35 years old, he's going to be 35 years old. Will he be capable of starting? Probably not at that age. And you're going to be paying him $27, $28 million. And that's why people will talk about, oh, the Bulls should sign Horford. Yeah, that's great for the next 2 years, but the fourth year is going to look just disgustingly bad, like really, really bad. And I think his third year will still be decent, but it'll be starting to look a bit smelly. But when you hit the fourth year and the fifth year in Atlanta's case, I think it's a bit of a concern when looking at Al Horford's free agency. Now, he had a great season this season. He finished ranked as the 16th ranked player in 9 cat leagues. He was 26th in 8 cat leagues. A slight improvement over last season, not massive, a few spots. And really, the sign of a great player. At his age of 30, he added an extra element to his game. He started hitting three-pointers. He hit a total of 99 three-pointers this season. That's more than he hit over his entire career, but over the past five seasons before that, he'd hit a total of 20 in 5 seasons. He hit 99 this season. He averaged 15 points, 7.2 rebounds. He hit 1.1 threes. He had 3 assists, 0.9 steals, 1.6 blocks, 50 and 81 and 35% from 3. So not only did he hit the threes, he hit them at a tremendously good level. 35% for a center is huge. But the thing that's concerning with Horford and his numbers is his rebounding numbers keep dropping. The shot blocking was still there at 1.6. The steal numbers are still good. The assist numbers are an underrated part of his game. But his rebounding keeps dropping off. And he's not someone who's really attacking the offensive glass at all. He hasn't hit 2 offensive boards per game over the past 2 seasons when he was a constant around 2.5 prior to that. The rebounding numbers are dropping off. And again, this is part of the decline that comes with age. When you get past 30, you don't get better. His game changed. He hit threes. That's fine. But the rebounding part of his game did start to drop off. Now, he's still going to be that guy who I think is, much like Millsap, is an underrated fantasy player. And when you look at him and start to think, well, where am I going to draft him when he starts appearing in round 3 or round 4, I think you're going to be pretty happy about it next season. But I don't think it's going to last all that long. Again, like Millsap, in 3 years' time, I don't think that we'll see him inside the top 50. He'll be a great center to play 20 minutes, 22 minutes a night by the time he's 35, but not playing 33 minutes and being the all-round menace that he is, basically. His numbers are almost identical to last season, apart from the threes. He's scoring 15 versus 15.2, same rebounding, same assists, same steals, 0.3 more blocks, a drop-off in his field goal percentage, an increase in his free throws, an increase in his three-point percentage. Very, very similar player, but it will start to drop off. And we look at his advanced numbers. He was pretty good. He was very good. He was second on the team in win shares. Second on the team in win shares per 48. Second on the team in box score plus minus. You know, all these things that we'd probably expect. Third on defensive box score plus minus because of the presence of a Thabo Sefolosha. Almost a 20 PER, 57 true shooting. Everything looks pretty good. And a super low turnover rate as well, just 8.8. The second lowest on the team outside of Tim Hardaway Jr., who just doesn't turn it over, but doesn't really look to pass either. So that's probably why his turnover rate is so low. But a tremendous assist rate of 16.7% as well. Horford is a great player. He has been an underrated player who's played out of position for majority of his career. But now that he could potentially go to another team, him playing the four, maybe it doesn't work. Maybe he's getting too old and slow to guard for, so he has to go back to center, which is where he's been playing anyway. So you'd think that he's going to end up playing the bulk of his career as a center in this league. He'll be a third-round pick most likely next season. Again, depending on where he goes, but you would have to think that he is going to be a third-round pick. This is something that was asked as a question, and I'll get to it now. It's from Eric Wagner, who says, he says, since you've done the Sixers review, can you talk about who a Teague trade would hurt and help on the Sixers? And I want to bring this up now because that rumored Jeff Teague trade, which was Jeff Teague for Nerlens Noel and Nick Stauskas and Robert Covington, I think it was, which just seems like craziness to me for the Sixers to do that, to get Jeff Teague on a one-year deal. And Nerlens Noel is such an underrated player, it appears, in the league. I really love what he can do defensively, but we're not talking about that. But if that trade was to go through, you would have to think that the Hawks are just going to say, well, Horford's not coming back. And they might have made that internal decision to say, we are not paying him $150 million over 5 years. We're not doing it. We can't extend that money to him. And then, therefore, let's trade one of our two point guards and get another center, whether it is Noel, whether it is Okafor, whoever it is. So maybe the Hawks have got that in their mind, that they go, we're just not extending that sort of money out to him. And Midnight Walker asked that question as well on Twitter. He says, if the Hawks trade for Noel, as I've been hearing, what do you think happens with Horford? I think that Horford, there is no chance that he is returning if they make that trade for Noel, and then they will start to go young with a shrewder Noel core and work, build through some younger assets. Yeah, Millsap is the older guy there, but that's the way. You wouldn't think that they would trade and then leave Noel to play 20 minutes off the bench. It doesn't really make much, and be paying $27 million to Al Horford at age 35. None of that makes any sense to me as to why they would do that. That takes us on to Jeff Teague, who had a really, let's be honest, piss poor negative 5.9 on-off number. That's really bad. He ranked 74th this season in nine cat leagues. He was 29th last season. 56th in 8 cat leagues. 19th last season. A really significant drop-off for Jeff Teague. We saw him benched down the stretch. He was a guy that I was benched down the stretch of games often. He was a guy I was really cautious of heading into this season because the last 3 months of last season, he played less than 30 minutes a night. And I was, okay, you know what? This is a concern. And people were trying to convince me that the Hawks had the number one seed wrapped up. They were resting. But it went deeper than that. And we saw that. He played 28 minutes a game this year only. Now, he's still a really good point guard. And he's still an underrated player. 15.6 points, 1.3 threes, 2.6 rebounds, 6 assists, 1.2 steals, 43 and 84, and hit 38% of his threes. And when I talk about the struggles of Jeff Teague, and this is part of the struggle that I have sometimes in talking about fantasy, is I have to look at a player myself and give my opinion on a player, but then I have to look at a team and a front office and a coaching staff and go, I view this player this way. How does this team and how does this coach view this player? And I don't think that the Hawks like Jeff Teague. They don't think they've liked him for a decent stretch of time. I don't think they fully trust him as a guy who should be a starter long term. And we saw that issue with his restricted free agency about 3 or 4 years ago. They were never sold on him as a player. And we keep seeing that now, that the coaching staff and the front office, which is basically Budenholzer in both roles, they're not sold on him. And they'll jerk him in and out of the lineup. Teague, who was an all-star last season, had a drop-off. He scored less points. He dished one assist less per game. He had half a steal less per game. His shooting dropped from 46 to 43. His free throws went from 86 to 84. And his field goal dropping from 46 to 43 includes the fact that his three-pointers went up from 34 to 38. So, which I should have probably brought up in advance. I'll do that now. I want to look at what his two-point percentage was, because it must have taken a pretty significant drop-off this season, given the increase in his three-point percentage, still saw an overall field goal percentage drop. Let's bring that up now. His two-point percentage went from 50 to 45. That's a big drop-off. And he did struggle at times getting into the lane. In terms of his advanced numbers, he was still a pretty decent player in that realm. An above average win shares per 48, third on the team in win shares per total. All his advanced numbers looked better than what Dennis Schroeder gave, with the exception, I think, of let me get the number up. No, everything. All of his numbers were superior to Dennis Schroeder's. Not to say Schroeder's were bad, but Teague's were better than him. He still had a 0.3 box score plus minus, which is not a big number. But nice win shares, nice defensive numbers, nice defensive splits. Still a negative on defense, but not a huge negative. And there's a... I just feel that if he isn't traded, there's a chance he loses this job this season anyway. They will try to trade him. I'm sure they will still be aggressively trying to get rid of him this offseason and through to the start of next season. But, and we'll talk about this when we get to Schroeder, I would not be shocked if Jeff Teague is not the starter by Christmas. Maybe that's maybe one of the boldest calls I've made, and it's maybe not even that bold. But if I own Jeff Teague in a dynasty league, I'm a little worried, because his age is not, he's not young. He's 27. He's not old, but he's not young. He's on a super cheap contract for $8 million, but then he's going to go out and get paid $25 million as an unrestricted free agent in 2017. And do you want Jeff Teague at 28 years old getting paid, or 29 years old getting paid $25 million? I guess probably not. Maybe he doesn't get 25, maybe he gets 17, $18 million. But by then, the cap would have had two spikes, and he'll be in line for some pretty big money. I'm worried if I own Jeff Teague. He already took a significant step back this year. The minutes dropped. I'm just not... Look, if he goes to Philadelphia, then he's going to have a resurgence this year, no doubt. His numbers will jump back up, and he'll be a top 40 guy. He might even be a top 30 player, easily. But if I'm in a dynasty league, I am a little bit concerned, and it's a risk, because if he does get traded to Philadelphia and you sell him now, you're going to be selling too low. But if he doesn't get traded, or if he gets traded to a different situation, then I think that the drop-off is going to continue. And he might find himself consistently sitting at that 70, 80, 90 sort of rank. And instead, he was 56th in nine cat leagues, 73rd in not 73rd. So I'm in the wrong spot here. Where's my numbers? Yeah, 74th in nine cat, 56th in eight cat. I think he finds himself at an 85-75 split between those two. And I'm a little bit concerned that he might lose his spot as a starting guard in this league over the next two seasons if he doesn't end up in Philadelphia. And again, I think that trade was just bonkers for the Sixers to even consider. And that got reported by Shams over at Yahoo at the Vertical. So him reporting it means that there's obviously some pretty serious talks going on. And whether it actually goes through or not, it seems unlikely. But the fact that they've talked about it is just ridiculous from the Sixers' point of view. And people might think that it's ridiculous on the Hawks' point of view, but it is an absolute steal if the Hawks could pull that off. Back to what I was talking about with Teague in Dynasty, it's a gamble. You can, if he goes to the Sixers and you trade him, you lose out. If he doesn't, then I think that you trade him for his current value as a top 50-ish player, I think you win in the long term. And you've got to weigh up that. That thought process of, does he go to Philadelphia? If I had him in a dynasty, and I don't, I would be really, really trying to see if I can get myself a top 50-ish player, or a top 50-ish upside player, or a collection of three or four guys who one of them might become a top 50 player. Because I do really think that Teague is going to start to struggle. Just a thought. He might not be the starting point guard by the time this season ends for the Hawks, even if he's still on the team. Kent Bazemore, the Bayster. Now, If you had have told me at the start of the season that by the end of the year, Kent Bazemore will be the 75th ranked player in nine-cat leagues. If you had have told me that Kent Bazemore would be the 77th ranked player in eight-cat leagues, I would have told you there was... I would have said there was no chance in hell. Thank you to Vince McMahon and his music there. There is no way I would have said Kent Bazemore was garbage. And I still believe that he isn't a great player. And he is going to get paid. And it's not going to end up looking good. And he's one of those players who started off the season just shooting at a ridiculous rate that was 10, 12% better than he's ever done in his career. And again, a player who took on a bigger role and then got more efficient at it somehow. And that's exactly what he did. He was the 75th ranked player for the season. But pre and post All-Star, 66/106, he dropped off. He went back to being Kent Bazemore. He started the season just hitting threes, basically shooting out of his ass. He ended up the season as a 34% three-point shooter. Yep. His last 3 months, he shot 29%. He ended the season as a 43% field goal shooter. Last 3 months, 39%. And sort of brought himself back in line with what he'd done previously throughout his career. But at the start of the year, he was 45, 46, hitting 40% of his threes, doing just crazy, crazy things. He scored almost 4 points per game, 4 points per 36 minutes more, an extra 0.6 threes per 36 more rebounds, almost 0.7 assists more steals per game. Everything increased, even in this bigger role. And that's not something that's all that common. He did take a big step forward, and I still don't buy him. And as a Bulls fan, if the Bulls say, we've announced the signing of Kent Bazemore, 4 years, $60 million, I'll go, seriously, like, what are you guys thinking about? I don't believe in Kent Bazemore. Do I think that he can have another top 100 season? Yeah, I think there's a chance of it. Would I put it at higher than 50%? No, I wouldn't. Because, again, he ended the season being more who I thought he was. A player who can't shoot, a player who's too small to guard big threes or a lot of threes, a player who struggles at times, and sometimes he has spectacular games, but a guy who does struggle at times, and I wouldn't feel comfortable with having to take him inside the top 75, which I think you might have to do. I would not feel comfortable with that whatsoever. And that's something that is concerning. He was a negative 2.9 in his on-off numbers. And interestingly enough, out of the four guys I've talked about, Millsap, Horford, Teague, and Bazemore, Millsap was a negative 0.1, so basically a zero. Horford was 0.6, Teague negative 5.9, and Bazemore negative 2.9 on on-off numbers. So three of those four guys the team was better with them on the bench rather than them on the court, which is a pretty weird situation for players who played the bulk of their minutes. If we look at Bazemore's advanced numbers, they weren't great. He was a negative offensively, a negative 1.3 box score plus minus, and gave us a 0.3 in box score, in total box score plus minus. He was a negative he was below average in win shares per 48. He gave us 4.1 win shares in total, but clearly a lot of that came defensively, 3.8 versus 0.3. Offensively, he is a guy that does struggle. He's not a great distributor of the ball. He had a higher turnover percentage than assist percentage. He is not a super strong rebounder, and again, the shooting dropped off. He finished with a true shooting of 55, but that second half split definitely saw that drop off, and I'm not sure the Hawks are going to be overly keen to pay him. They wouldn't pay Damari Carroll $15 million, and he's a better player than what Kent Bazemore is. And I think they believe in their ability to get wings as fifth options and develop them and get them into meaningful minutes, like they did with Carroll, like they did with Bazemore. And that's the other concern. Carroll was putrid this season in Toronto. Yes, he was injured, but he was putrid when he played. And he was putrid in Utah, but came across to Atlanta, became semi-star, and is at the Atlanta system. And I think the same thing could really happen with Bazemore. So back to my initial thing, do I think that he can be a top 100 player? Yeah, but I'm not confident, and I wouldn't put it above 50% that he can be that guy. Probably enough Kent Bazemore talk. You probably think I'm a little bit harsh on him, but if you've listened to this podcast over the course of the season, this is nothing new. Kyle Korver, the only starter with a significant positive on-off number of 4.9, and he was really poor this year compared to last year. Like, really poor. He was the 124th ranked player in NICAP, down from 35th the year before. It is a big, big drop-off. He basically couldn't hit shots, and that is what Kyle Korver does. He played two less minutes per game, but he went down to 9.4 points. He hit only two threes, down from 2.9. That's a big drop. Less rebounds at 3.4, less assists at 2, 0.8 steals, which is actually an increase, but his blocks went down. That was a big strength of his last season as a shooting guard. He shot, instead of 49% from the field, he shot 44. Instead of 90% from the line, he shot 86. Instead of 49% from 3, he shot 40. And 40 is still just ridiculously good, but it's not 49. And that's where Korver had that drop-off. He had two off-season surgeries on his ankle and on his wrist, I think it was, and that obviously impacted what he was able to do. And he struggled for most of the season and got worse as the season went on. He's old. He's not a young player. Kyle Korver is 35 years old. He won't get better. He won't get back to a top 40 position. Will he be a player who can be a top 100 player? Maybe. But there's a case to be made for him not to be drafted in standard leagues next season. I don't think that's too bold of a call, but you couldn't own him for big chunks of this current season. So I think there's a case to be made that he just won't be that player that you look to draft, because yeah, he hit two threes, but when he's doing nothing else, what's the benefit of him? Look at his advanced numbers. They were okay. He had the same win shares as Kent Bazemore. Again, a below average win shares per 48. He was a negative in box score plus minus. He was a 9.7 PER. Still a good 58% true shooting, but that's a decrease in what he did the season before, clearly. If for some reason you can get anything from him in a dynasty league and get value, if someone believes he'll bounce back, do it. But I don't think you're going to be able to get that. His days as being a top 80 fantasy player are well and truly cooked. His days as being a top 100 player is probably well and truly done as well. And again, I don't think that, and because I like to use those picks between 100 and 150 in that sort of range as guys who I think can jump up. He doesn't fit into that range, and I wouldn't be taking him in the top 100, so therefore he's probably going to go undrafted. And yes, you might stream him in. Hey, I need some threes. Kyle Korver's there. He started out the season hot, but I'm not super excited for him for next season. I am super excited for Dennis Schroeder. A lot of people, he's a very divisive prospect, I'll put it that way. A lot of people really like Dennis Schroeder. A lot of people just can't stand him, and they can't see why anyone likes him. I'm in the side that likes him. I think that he can be, especially from a fantasy point of view, a tremendous producer, like a guy that is a top 50 player. If he is a starting point guard, lock him in. If Teague is traded and all they say, you know what, we're starting Schroeder, lock him in, top 50. If you're in a dynasty league, draft him like he is going to be a top 50 player, because he will be a top 50 player as a starter. I've got no doubt in my mind about that. But when is that going to happen? That's the concern. He finished this season as the 217th ranked player in 9 cat leagues, 154th in 8 cat leagues. That's not great. It's not spectacular by any stretch. He averaged 11.1 points and hit 1-3. He had 4.3 assists in 20 minutes. That's good. He had 0.8 steals. Pretty good. 42 and 80. Pretty good. 33% from 3. Pretty good numbers. But he needs that starting role. If we look at his per 36 output this season, it all increased. More scoring, more threes, more rebounds, same assists, more steals, more blocks, same field goal percentage, a bit less on the free throw percentage. But if he starts hitting 36 to 37% of his threes and cuts down the turnovers a little bit, which he actually increased them this season, and he did play a little bit next to Teague, but that's obviously not going to be his role. He needs to get that shooting up and become a more reliable three-point shot. But if Teague is gone, and you should be investing in Schroeder in Dynasty anyway as a top 50 guy, but he will be a top 50 guy this season if he is the starting point guard and he's playing in excess of 30 minutes. That is a very early call, I know, but that's the way that he's 22 years old. He's coming into the last season of his rookie deal. He will be a guy who can put up numbers without necessarily being the best player. And I think that he's better than a lot of people think. I also think he's probably worse than a lot of people think. But I am relatively high on him. I do think he's got starter caliber talent, and I'm very interested to see how it works out. In the games that he played 30 minutes for the season, he averaged over 16 points a game. He averaged over 6 assists a game. He averaged about 5 rebounds a game. They're pretty impressive numbers in those games. He only played 4 games over 30 minutes, but they're still pretty good. In the games where he played between 20 and 29, which is 29 games of the season, 13 points, 2.5 rebounds, 5.5 assists, that's very good. And over a 3 a game. And that's only up to 29 minutes. If he plays 30, again, I'm going to drum this into your head. He's an absolute top 50 player. He is bordering on top 40. And if for some reason he gets nominated as a starting point guard, you will not have to take him in the top 40. I wouldn't have thought. But he will absolutely end up there, in my opinion. I couldn't feel stronger about the fact that Dennis Schroeder will be that top 40 sort of player who will average 16 and 7, 1.5 steals, 1.5 threes. I think that he can realistically do that as a starting point guard, whether that's next season or the season after. We don't know that at this point. He was a plus 5.4 in his on-off numbers, one of the best players on the team in that metric. In terms of his other advanced numbers, they weren't fantastic. He posted negatives, minor negatives in offensive and defensive box score plus minus for a negative 1.4, but a nice defensive win shares of 2.3, but his win shares per 48 was pretty poor, but he still posted an above average PER. So I think that there's, and PER again is a stat that favors the big men. So when you've got a backup guard who's a young guard, I think that it's pretty encouraging to see him with an above average PER as we're seeing with him at the moment. Enough Dennis Schroeder talk. Thabo Sefolosha. He's an interesting player. I thought he had a pretty decent season heading across to Atlanta after that. Well, not after, because he played there last season, but had that nightclub incident at the end of last season. Came back and played a pretty significant role for this team. He was the 147th ranked player in 9 cat leagues, which I think would surprise people. He was 169th in 8 cat leagues, and there was times when he was playing over Kent Bazemore, as he rightfully should have, because Bazemore was terrible during those stretches. And that's, again, shows you to me the level of Bazemore, is that he was getting outplayed by Thabo Sefolosha. Now, Sefolosha is not a great fantasy asset, but he's a better fantasy asset than you think. And I think that shows up in those rankings. He played 85 games, including playoffs, at 23 minutes a pop, 6.3 points, he hit 0.6 threes, he grabs 4.5 rebounds, which is great as a shooting guard, 1.1 steals, half a block, 50% from the field, and shot 34% from three. So he's a guy that can contribute steals, he can hit some threes, he can do it relatively efficiently as well. But Thabo Sefolosha has been around a while. Is there ability for him to become a starter again in this league? At age 32, I'd probably say not, with persistent ankle problems that caused him to sit a few back-to-backs for the first few months of the season. I'm not sure that he gets better than this, but he is a guy that is underrated, and he will still continue contributing in that 20-minute role, I would imagine, for the next 2 to 3 seasons, and be that player who hovers between that 170 to 250 mark. I think that's probably a realistic aim for him. Thiago Splitter. Came across from the San Antonio Spurs in a trade to clear out cap space for the Spurs in order for them to sign LaMarcus Aldridge. It appeared to be a steal to me in the offseason. I thought that Splitter was going to be able to play 24 minutes as a backup center, and then that would allow Horford to shift down to the four, play with Millsap as well, and generally be a really good basketball player. Turns out there was two things that happened there. A, he couldn't stay on the court, and B, the Hawks refused to use him. So therefore, I was wrong. I thought that he could have sneaky. And again, if you saw the rankings at the start of the season on Basketball Monster, I think he was ranked 120th, and a lot of people were calling it out. That's a stupid ranking. Yeah, cool. But it was all based on how the numbers play out. I would never have drafted him in that sort of situation, because the upside there wasn't there for him. But he still could have produced in that sort of level. But he didn't get anywhere near that. 248th for the season. Another injury shutting down his year. 270th in 8 cat leagues. Just not sure we ever see a healthy Thiago Splitter again. He is a truly great's maybe pushing it, but he's a very good defender. He is really good offensively in terms of setting screens and passing and cuts and that sort of stuff. And we didn't get to see any of that, and he wasn't used appropriately to me while he was in Atlanta. If you look at what his numbers came out like, he played 36 games at 16 minutes a pop, 5.6 points, 3.5 rebounds, 0.6 steals, 0.3 blocks, 52 and 81. So, as per usual with him, really efficient in the shooting. But his numbers, just not all that impressive. Nothing spectacular. A negative box score plus minus. A poor win shares. But he only played a few games, but a very high win shares per 48. He's a player who does impact teams positively. Now, he'll be back for one more year at $8 million in Atlanta, but whether they feel like they can trust him or not remains to be seen. But I think that they should be giving him 20 minutes or not. Now, if the Hawks lose Horford and don't sign anyone, they've got to start Tiago Splitter. Will he become a top 100 player? Probably not. But he would be an interesting guy in the back end of a 9-cat league, maybe because he then plays 27 minutes. But I don't think that he'll really get to that. And what does he do? He's really efficient. He grabs rebounds. He's a decent shot blocker. He's a better on-court player than he is a fantasy player. And that means he should be able to get minutes, but even then, that didn't happen last season. Now, whether he's healthy or not, we don't know at this point, but Splitter is a guy who I think is underrated. He was thought of as being basically trash for this team, and he is a lot better, and he was utilized that way as well, but he is a lot better than that. And interesting to see how he goes, but he's 31 years of age, so he's not getting better. He'll probably be better than last season, but he's not getting better overall as a prospect or as a player. So don't get too excited about him and think, oh, it's time for Tiago to bounce back. Horford's gone. Yep, let's invest heavily in Tiago Splitter, because I don't think that that will be the case. Chris Humphries. Actually, back on Splitter. 6.7 was his on-off number. One of the best on the team. That's pretty good. Definitely. Chris Humphries came across, didn't play a huge amount of games in Atlanta, just 21 games. He had a weird season, started off in Washington as a stretch four, started hitting threes really weirdly, headed across to Phoenix in the Markieff Morris trade, cut there and bought out there and signed in Atlanta to end the season. As an unrestricted free agent, he's probably going to latch on somewhere as a backup big man who can play 20 minutes a night. He ended up playing 16 minutes a night this season. Maybe that's his limit, 16. He averaged almost 7 points, 4 rebounds, half a block on 42 and 81. Now, he suffered a big dip in his field goal percentage because of the increased 3-point attempts he was taking. He took 0.7 per game in those 16 minutes, so that's a pretty fair whack of threes considering he'd never shot them before in his life, and he hit them at 33%, so not bad, but that's not really what his game is built on. He's going to be that deeper league, consistent guy that can give you, 4 or 5 rebounds and 7 points or so in a bench role, and that can be really useful in some fantasy leagues, but in most, it's not going to do a huge amount to get you too excited. His advanced numbers while in Atlanta, nothing to be really excited. Defensively, he was pretty good. His win shares were okay. Win shares per 48 were pretty impressive and a solid PER. So he's still got something to offer the right team in the right role, but it's never going to be a role that necessitates him being owned in standard leagues, I wouldn't have thought. Mike Scott, I should have checked this up, but Mike Scott, I think, got some issues happening with that legal problem. Now, he had it at the start of last season. I thought it would cost him games. It didn't, but it's crept up now. So we might not see Mike Scott next season due to some jail time, due to some marijuana charges, I believe, that he was charged with. His season was up and down. I'm not a big believer in Mike Scott, but he played okay. 1.9 on off, 267 9-cat. He was 292 in 8-cat leagues, but that was a drop-off from what he did the previous season. Scott played 16 minutes a game and averaged 6 points, 3 rebounds. He hit 0.8 threes a game, which in 16 minutes is pretty impressive, and that's what he does. He hit 40% of his threes. He hits a lot of threes. He doesn't do much else. The defense is poor, but his percentages are good, and he hits threes, and that can be useful, but with his unsure future, with legal problems, with the fact that he's got a non-guaranteed year in his deal, he might not be in the NBA next season, so don't get too excited about Mike Scott, and he is also a lot older than what you think. Scott is 28 years old already, and again, 28 years old, legal problems, the only way is up, but it's not. The only way is down for Mike Scott. He's not going to be doing a huge amount moving forward. He posted some okay numbers, a good win shares per 48, box score plus minus was pretty impressive. I still do not rate him very highly at all, but he was okay. Defense is a real concern with him, though, at the power forward spot. Timmy Hardaway, really good on-off number, 3.9. He came across in that trade for Jerry and Grant. It turned out to be from the Knicks, and I wasn't a big fan of the trade from the outset because I would have rather had that draft pick and maybe not used it on Grant, but got someone else. Hardaway was one of my more disliked players at the Knicks last season. He came across to the Hawks, and you thought, okay, well, the Hawks must see something. I trust the Hawks' development. I trust Budenholzer. I think that they might see something here. Obviously, they didn't believe in it. because he barely played to start the season. But kudos to him. Kudos to Budenholzer, because when they brought him in and got him to play, he looked good. And that's something I haven't really ever been able to say about Tim Hardaway Jr. before. He looked good. And that's a good start. Now, he averaged 16 minutes a game in his 60 games. 6 points, 0.8 threes, but he's a guy that just does nothing else. 1.6 rebounds, 1 assist, 0.4 steals, 42 and 87. Like, can't do anything assist-wise, can't do anything rebounding-wise. Actually took less, he got less assists this season than he did last season per 36. But I got his field goal percentage back up to 42. But as a guy who's a three-point shooter, he has gone from 36 to 34 to 32% in his three seasons in the NBA. His minutes totals decreased dramatically this season. He suffered a big drop-off in his point-scoring ability. I'm not sure what to make of Tim Hardaway. I know what to make. I don't think he's very good. But if the Hawks believe in him and they let Kent Bazemore walk and they don't sign anyone, Hardaway has to be that guy that moves into that role. He'll play the two. Korver plays the three. It has to be him. Now, if he jumped into a starting role and played 30 minutes a night, would he be a standard league draftable guy? My answer to you, that is no. He doesn't do anything. He hits threes at a piss poor rate. He scores decently. He does it at a poor field goal percentage. He hits a lot of free throws in minimal attempts. One attempt per game this season. One. He doesn't get to the line. He doesn't influence that category. He hits threes. That's what he does. He does nothing else. Nothing else well at all. And even that took a big step back. He could be the guy that's in line for it, and he could surprise me like Bazemore, but he, at this point, if I'm drafting now, which you wouldn't be because it'd be dumb, but if you are drafting now, he's not a guy that I think is going to take on the tradition of Carroll and Bazemore becoming top 100 players, because the game just doesn't translate to fantasy at all. It's just, he's just not a good player. He was, in terms of box score plus minus in this team, he was right down the bottom at a negative 2.1. He snuck over the win shares above average in 0.1. And for those of you who don't know, win shares per 48, 0.1 is considered league average. He was 105, so not a bad number there. And his defense definitely picked up a bit from where he was in New York and posted a better defensive win shares than he did offensive win shares. But overall, I'm not a big fan of Tim Hardaway Jr. And I think if you look at it, he's a chance to get an increased role if Bazemore leaves, but I wouldn't be getting overly excited about that. Mike Muscala is a guy I thought was underused this season in Atlanta. He finished as 343rd ranked player this season, down from 236 last year. It's a big drop off. He was a negative 7.2 in his box score plus, in his on-off numbers. Only played 9 minutes a game. I thought that the minutes that Mike Scott got, Mike Muscala should have been getting. Chris Humphries got those minutes. I thought Muscala should have got them. He really struggled. 3 points, 2 rebounds, 0.4 blocks, 50 and 81. But he's a super efficient shooter. He can hit threes. He can defend. And I think that there is mini breakout potential for Muscala. If Scott's not around, if Horford leaves, Muscala's a guy that can jump back from 340s back into the top 200 and be a top 170 player. In terms of per 36 value for this season, he was 119th, which is, I think, fourth on this team behind Bazemore, Teague, Horford, and Millsap. You know, that's pretty good for a guy that, you know, really didn't do a huge amount. But I'm not sure if they trust in him. But I reckon they should. They should just look at these advanced numbers and have a look at, you know, when you look at the top six box score plus minus defense numbers, he's there. He's ahead of Splitter. He's ahead of Korver. He's ahead of Humphries. He's ahead of Scott. He's ahead of Teague. He's ahead of Schroeder, of course. And the big men are going to dominate that. But he's right up there. And, you know, overall, box score plus minus, negative 0.5. Not bad. Above average win shares per 48 at 1.36. Oh, sorry, 0.136. Pretty impressive, considering how few minutes he actually played. If you're listening in a deep dynasty league, that is a very under-the-radar sort of acquisition that you can make that might work out. And not every move you have to make, oh, look at this, I got a guy ranked 250th and he went to 50th. If you get a guy ranked 350th and he becomes a 200th ranked player and you give up someone who's ranked 350th, it's a big win and it really helps in those deep leagues. And he's a guy that I do believe can have a bit of a breakout next season, given the way that things are looking like they're going to break in Atlanta at the moment and the trust I have in his ability. Speaking of trust in players' abilities, Kirk Heinrich played 13 minutes a game in 52 minutes and averaged 2.7 points and 1.5 assists, shooting 38% from the field. He did shoot 94 from the line and 39 from three, which are both good numbers, but I don't know why Kirk Heinrich continues to get minutes in the NBA. He's an unrestricted free agent. If the Bulls sign him again, I will seriously fly over there and request a sit-down, face-to-face meeting with that front office. I don't know the appeal of Kurt Heinrich at this point, at this age. His defense suffers. It's not bad. He's still an okay defender, but he's not the level that he used to be. But offensively, he is just one of the biggest minuses in the NBA. He's just not worth it. He's a zero win share. He adds nothing to a team apart from some locker room chemistry, perhaps, and the player who's got every single spare part accessory available. He looks like a creative player on NBA 2K. Arm sleeves, leg sleeves, ankle braces, headbands, glasses, wristbands, anything you can put on him. He goes into the accessory store. I'll have one with a lot, thanks. You can refer to that as a Kirk Heinrich from now on. Anyway, no point talking about Kirk Heinrich. Eddie Tavares really showed a little bit this season. Didn't play at all in his first season. He was still overseas. Came in, this was his rookie season. And look, a 407th ranked player is not anything to get overly excited about. But I thought that Tavares, in the 11 games that he played, he looked damaging. He only played 6 minutes and blocked half a shot and shot 58% from the field. He grabbed 2 rebounds in 6 minutes. And that's, if you look at his per 36 numbers, I'm pretty sure they're going to look pretty interesting, because that shot blocking ability is huge. He averaged 3.1 blocks per 36, 13 and 11, at 58%. Steals, forget about it. Assists, forget about it. But he can be a shot blocker. And again, with Horford potentially moving on, with Mike Scott not there maybe, with Chris Humphries gone, there's going to be some center minutes opening up. Now, I think that Muscala gets it, but Tavares is a very interesting player. And he's been compared to Rudy Gobert. He's not the same defender that Rudy Gobert is, but he is still a really good defender, and he could develop into something over the next 3 years. He is a long-term dynasty gamble over the next 2 to 3 years that could turn out being a top 100 player. It seems unlikely, but his defense is pretty impressive. And I look at the defensive box score plus minus on this team. He was third behind Millsap, fourth behind Millsap, Cephalosha, and Horford. Then you got Eddie Tavares at 2.5. Offensively, a negative 4.9. But in a rookie season to be 2.5, that is a huge, huge starting point. He was almost an average PER. And he only played 73 minutes for the season. So I know it's all small sample size, but he projected as a good defender, and a really good defender, and he showed he can be a really good defender. So you want someone who can find a role, even like a Bismack Biyombo role, in 3 years. That's him. And he might top out at being a top 200 player, but that, again, can be useful in some spots. And maybe he gets to be a top 75 player just by getting better offensively. He's averaging 9 points a game and shooting 60% and getting his hand on one steal a game. That's all possible, but it's a long-range punt at the moment. Lamar Patterson, I think shocked a few people, including myself, by starting quite a few games to start the year, but he fizzled out and did not play a single minute after the All-Star break. He ranked 423rd in 9-cat and 413th in 8-cat league. He was actually a positive on the court, a 1.5 plus, so that's pretty good from him. But overall, only 11 minutes in his 39 games, 2.3 points, 1.1 assists, 35% and 74%, but it was his rookie season, so the 35 from the field might become 41, the 74 from the line might become 77, the 25 from three might become 35, and he could see a big jump forward. And he could be the guy that, if he has a big preseason and a big summer league, maybe he takes Kent Bazemore's minutes. There's a possibility. They did start him this season when Hardaway was completely out of the rotation. They were going Lamar Patterson over Hardaway, so they don't dislike him. They think that he's got something. And again, a rookie who comes in defensively and was a negative 0.3 defensive box score plus minus, that's a win to me. Positive in defensive win shares, that's a plus to me. But overall, his offensive game did really struggle. A true shooting of just 47%. That needs to come up to 53, 54% and still work on that defense. But he's not a complete lost cause to me. He is 24, so he's a little bit older. Actually older than what Hardaway is. But he's not... He's someone who I think we see have a better season next season. I'll put it that way. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. Then we're going to look at a couple of overseas Hawks prospects, and then we're going to answer your questions.
This is the part with just the guitar, while we wait on the bass and drums. I I'll sing of loving you from afar. Well, here they come.
A couple of international prospects that the Hawks drafted in the second round of the 2015 draft, and I don't think we're going to have too much exciting stuff to talk about with these guys, but hey, let's mention them anyway because we're trying to be as complete as possible in these podcasts. Demetrios Agravanis, a Greek player, if you couldn't tell by that name. He stands 6'10", he weighs 210, he's a forward, obviously. And he was playing over in Greece this season. He played for, if I bring it up, he played for Olympiakos. And didn't do a huge amount. He played 48 games and averaged just 13 minutes a contest. As a big man, when you're shooting 42%, that's not ideal. But he did take 2.1 threes a game in his 13 minutes, shooting 34%, making 0.7. That's not bad. So he's a bit of a stretch big, as is pretty common for those Euro guys. Almost 3 rebounds in 13 minutes. Not terrible numbers. Half a block, again, not terrible. And 5 points. Obviously, he's got a little bit of a way to come. If you look at some of his advanced numbers, a really nice win share total of 3 in those limited minutes. So that's a positive sign. And an above average PER in the Greek league of 20. And a really offensive rating of 117 as opposed to defensive of 88. So that's a big, big differential there. You're talking about a plus 29 over the course of the season. And a guy that I think that, again, as a big man, he's probably going to need a couple more seasons in Greece, whether he ever comes over or not. It remains to be seen. I need to check out. He's 21 years of age, so he's not like he's a 25, 26-year-old, but he might come over at age 23 and be able to chip in with him 4 or 5 seasons as a decent guy. If you've got stash potential, if you've got minor league squads and your league's deep, Agravanis could come over and be a stretch big who does block some shots and is a decent guy to look at, but you know, a poor free throw shooter doesn't really help his case at ever becoming a really good three-point shooter. The other guy is a Swedish player the Hawks drafted in the second round, and that is Marcus Eriksson. He's a 6'7 shooting guard. He is 22 years old. He plays for Barcelona Lassa in the Spanish league. He did not have a great year. He averaged just 9 minutes a game in the 27 that he played, averaging 3 points. He shot 33 from 3, 41 from the field, 56 from the line, so struggled in all three areas of shooting. 0.4 assists per game in 9 minutes. Look, if we translate that out to per 36, you're talking about 1.6 assists as a shooting guard. That's putrid. Steal numbers, not bad in his 9 minutes, 0.4, but less than one rebound a game he averaged. These are not good numbers and nothing really encouraging to me when looking at Eriksson's numbers. Win shares, nothing to write home about there. PER of 11.8, so below average there. A true shooting of just 53%. If I'm banking on one of these two Hawks second round draft picks to come over and have an impact, it is going to be Agravanis and not Eriksson. But it'd be interesting to have another Swedish player in the league, but still, I don't think we're going to be seeing Eriksson come over into the league, so I wouldn't be putting much stock in him as a dynasty stash target. Let's go to your questions. Dean Johnny Faulkner says, if Atlanta managed to re-sign Horford and maybe some tweaks to their second unit, do you believe that the Hawks can eventually beat the LeBron James curse they have? No. No. I don't think that re-signing Horford makes them better than the Cavs unless things dramatically change in Cleveland or LeBron gets injured or he just falls off a complete cliff. No, I don't. Nathan Ritchie says, what should our expectations for Millsap be if Horford stays or if he goes to a different team? I think you might see a drop in efficiency if Horford goes, but I still think that you're going to increase his counting stats. Maybe his shot blocking numbers increase a little bit as well. But I still imagine, as I touched on earlier, Millsap's going to be that second round player, irrespective of whether Horford is there or not. Joseph Diffenbach, what would Schroeder's value be if Tay gets traded next season in Dynasty? Touched on that already. He's a top 50 guy. He's potentially a top 40 guy. Dean Vasek, who is a good replacement for Kent Bazemore if he leaves? Well, obviously, they want to go after Durant. Nick Batum would be sensational here. But a couple of guys that they could go after who are complete no-names, a couple of the Pelicans' wings that they had, James Ennis, I think would be an interesting guy for them to try and develop. And Jordan Hamilton, who played also in the Pelicans. These are very, very, very low totem pole names. But Kent Bazemore was in that same group. Damari Carroll was in that same group. I really like Ennis if they could find a way to get him. Or even Jordan Hamilton, who shows some defensive chops as well. I think that he would be not a bad player. The guy that I would have loved to have seen that role is Justin Holiday, who they traded for Kirk Heinrich, which was a pretty dumb move from the Hawks, in my opinion. Would have liked to have seen Holiday get that extra run. But I think that they feel pretty confident that if they don't get a big name like a Durant or a Batum, that they can just go bargain basement with a wing, even make a trade for someone, you know, that's on a team and the team doesn't value them. Anthony Brown from the Lakers, I think they'd be happy getting someone like that. They would love to get their hands on Kyle Anderson from the Spurs, but I don't think that's happening. But I think they're pretty confident in developing wings their own way. Now, Alan1031, who asked this question via the Fantrax forum. Fantrax is a great spot. You can always ask questions on Twitter, but if you want to expand your answer, the Fantrax forums is a great place to ask questions. Alan says, "Hi Josh, would Kent Bazemore leave? I think that Kent Bazemore does leave. If yes, who would get his minutes? Depends what they do, but I'd say Hardaway is in the box seat if we're keeping the exact team. And this is a new player from free agency, so sort of touching on the same stuff that Dean touched on. But Hardaway would be in the box seat with Lamar Patterson being sort of the dark horse guy behind him that might jump ahead of him. But neither guy exudes excitement. I don't think either of them would be a top 100 fantasy player. I know that Hardaway wouldn't, and I don't think that Patterson could take that sort of... Although that he could. Patterson's more likely to take that leap in a full-time 30-minute-a-game role than what Hardaway is, in my opinion. We are done for today's podcast, guy. Remember, Red Rock 30-team league part 2 is recruiting. I've got stacks of applications. If you want to throw yours into the pile, please do so. 15 of you have already heard. There's another 15 to come. So be on the lookout for emails over the next 3 to 4 days as I sift through all of those. The guys in the original Red Rock Dynasty or Red Rock 30 team league, emails regarding league rules will be going out in the next day or so. And then there'll also be the initial drawing of the draft slot selection process. So all that will come out soon as well. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. Check out Fantrax, our great sponsor, and Basketball Monster, of course. You know all about Basketball Monster. Check that out. That's it. Enjoy the NBA Finals when they're back on. Enjoy your life. Enjoy your family. Enjoy everything. Enjoy the cold weather if you're in Australia, because it's been very, very cold. Not ideal. Anyway, thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.